All right, well, to the attendees, welcome in. We're going to do the fats, fuels, and oils forecast for the week of February 22nd. Today, we have Tori Alden with us, and he's going to go into the veg oils segment of this. As always, if you have questions, go ahead and drop them in the Q&A section, and we'll get to them at the end of Tori's presentation. And with that, Tori, I'll kick it to you.
Thanks, George. So another week and the rally in vegetable oil prices continues. Cash markets are strong and sort of pushing up to record levels or beyond record levels for a lot of things. Canola seed futures have reached an all-time record above $800 per ton. And it just kind of reflects the concern, one, about South American production and developing dryness in Argentina. It's been off and on dry in Argentina for a lot of the year. But then, two, I think also a little bit of the anticipation of what's to come in terms of demand from renewable diesel and also relatively strong demand from non-biofuels. So with that, let's kind of hop into the forecast here. You can see our forecast curve looks a little bit different for soybean oil futures. The front end is a struggle to kind of keep up with the rally in prices. Even this morning, this looks like we're at the top end of the range, but this is really based on yesterday's close, and prices are up another 3/4 of a cent almost today. And so this would be above the upper end of our range. Part of this is kind of due to the way that we do this, and I won't go into a bunch of detail on this, but I think over the next couple of weeks, we're going to change the way that we do this so that we're not averaging the months for the front month contract, but rather forecasting each individual month, or showing you our forecast for each individual month for the front month forecast. That'll make it a little bit easier in times like this where prices have jumped more than 3 cents from last month, and so the average looks a little weird and makes it tough to kind of get the range correct. That said, the strength of the rally has been surprising this early on. We certainly, and obviously, as you can tell by our forecast, expect prices to remain pretty well supported throughout the rest of the year. But that said, this rally has been strong, and I think probably has exceeded a lot of people's expectations. And there's really little in the way between here and 50 cents, and then even a little bit above 50 cents, which it looks like probably soybean oil futures will get to much earlier than expected, and that's roughly double where they bottomed last year, last spring, I guess, after the initial sell-off from the coronavirus pandemic. For soybean oil, the continued struggle remains to be the split between biofuel use and non-biofuel use. One of the things that I wrote about in the report this week was sort of this streak here of non-bio use falling below 1 billion pounds for much of the end of the marketing year, and how unusual that is. It was, I think, the late 80s, the last time that we had a stretch of that many months in a row where non-biofuel use fell below 1 billion pounds a month. I don't know that I really think that that's where we're going to end up, but for right now, given everything that we look at, that is kind of the easiest spot to draw down our usage and keep ending stocks at a reasonable level. Of course, ending stocks could fall further. Of course, our outlook for biomass-based diesel production could be a little bit too optimistic, or exports could fall further. But we're already kind of below where USDA is on exports. We're already 350 million pounds below where USDA is on exports. and we're 400 or 350 million pounds above where they are on imports, and yet our ending stocks number is below theirs. They came our way a little bit in the last WASD report, and I expect that they probably will again. But trying to get this calculus right of non-biofuel usage, biodiesel production and exports is going to be something that I'm going to probably talk a lot about over the coming months, and the changes in those areas are going to be the key things that really drive the market going forward. This week, we also got our first look at USDA's 21-22 balance sheets, courtesy of the US Ag Outlook Forum. The biggest surprise there, and it's not necessarily really a surprise, but the biggest surprise there was their forecast for soybean oil usage in biodiesel production, which was 7.8 billion pounds, down from the 8.3 that they're projecting for 2021. I think this is probably more a situation where the way that they forecast has a bigger impact on the number than the actual sort of reality on the ground right now. Obviously, we agree that there's going to be some rationalization in biodiesel production over the coming years, but given where we see a lot of the renewable diesel capacity coming online, we're not sure that that the drawdown is that fast in 21-22. But again, the way that they forecast this stuff, it's different than the monthly WASD. It's not put out by NAS. It's put out by a committee, essentially. And while obviously they're trying to do their best, I think they're constrained a little bit by some of the models that they use. And so it wouldn't be surprising if, much in the same way that they're doing with 2021 right now, they end up raising that forecast as we move forward in time. The other big surprise out of the Ag Outlook Forum was their prediction that soybean crush will rise just 10 million bushels over in the next marketing year. If that happens, and given the outlook for the demand for feedstocks from the biofuel industry, I think soybean oil stocks will be substantially tighter than they projected, which they projected essentially down 100 million pounds from their 2021 forecast at 1.6 billion pounds. I think that as we sort of sort out the, okay, exactly where does non-biofuel usage end up, and how much of that needs to go away for this to sort of stabilize, the next big question will be how much can crush expand and how quickly can crush expand, and what do prices need to do to make crush expand? We've talked before about the fact that basically crushers crush for soybean meal, and then they kind of try to figure out what to do with the soybean oil after they've matched the demand for meal for with crushing volumes. That's probably going to continue through 2021. 2021-22 is probably the first year that there's some potential for the oil share to need to go to a level that encourages crush to meet veg oil demand rather than soybean meal demand. And in that case, then that's gonna be an area that as an analyst, I haven't really experienced before, or at least not for a very long time. There was a very short period of time where soybean oil prices rose up dramatically, and the oil share rose up enough that I think you could make the argument that they were crushing for oil. This is going to be, once this happens, if this happens, this is going to be a much more sustained period of that. And that's going to bring a whole host of issues that are going to need to be figured out in order to provide enough soybean oil to meet all of the feedstock demand that the new capacity will require, or maybe it will turn out that USDA is right and biodiesel capacity just shrinks much more quickly than we expect. However, given the level of RIN prices and the other credits that are available to biodiesel producers, I think that process is going to be a little bit slower. And I think that there are going to be some biodiesel producers that are going to be able to hang on just by shipping into LCFS states. And then the relatively high value of RINs. Now in the biodiesel section this week, I talked a little bit about some of the scenarios that could evolve with the HOBO spread, which is a proxy for biodiesel production profitability and RIN prices. And we'll talk a little bit more about that in a little while. But I think in general, these markets are going to get more challenging, not less challenging to forecast. That's not a big surprise, and that's not saying anything that's controversial. But I think that once we solve sort of one problem, there's sort of three or four more problems that are going to need to be resolved by the market right behind that. And so there is going to be more uncertainty over the next couple of years than at any other time in my career, I think almost certainly. For canola oil, we also changed this around a little bit and raised our forecast. We still expect a little bit of essentially harvest pressure in this area, but then we expect prices to continue to rise along with the rest of sort of veg oil prices and hit levels that we haven't seen in a really, really, really long time. We also bumped up the front end of our canola oil forecast a little bit this week, just based in part on the strength in Canadian prices. These are Chicago prices, but Canadian prices have risen over the last couple of weeks by $75 per ton to $1,360 or somewhere in that area per ton, which is a record level for sure, and is part of the reason that we've seen the sharp rise in canola seed futures, which have just kind of gone parabolic over the last couple of weeks. And so I think that this forecast is something that I'm probably a little bit less comfortable with, this decline here, but the seasonal tendency for prices to decline around harvest and into harvest is pretty strong. And so for right now, that's what we're going to stick with. The one other thing that I would note is that this series is actually going to go away, and we're going to replace what we forecast with a series in on the West Coast to more accurately reflect, I think, where the center of demand for canola oil in North America is going to be going forward. So over the next couple of weeks, you probably will see this chart change a little bit, and the price levels will probably look a little bit different, and that'll be a function of when we make that change over. Of course, when we do, we'll talk about it on this webinar. But either way, it's likely that canola oil prices are going to remain pretty well supported. If there is a drawdown in soybean oil usage and non-biofuel applications like we expect, canola oil is going to kind of have to pick up the slack. There's a big penalty for doing that in terms of economics, because the typical price spread between canola oil and soybean oil is 45 cents, somewhere in there. And so non-biofuel users are really going to need to be pressed into substituting canola oil for soybean oil. In some applications, this makes a lot of sense in food manufacturing and that kind of thing. We've already made a big shift that happened in the 90s as people became more aware of more heart healthy, I guess. But I think that there's the potential for another shift beyond that. And if you looked at this stuff sort of in per capita terms, based on and broke it down into the various demand categories on the balance sheet, I think we're probably going to take another step up in per capita consumption of canola oil and for non-biofuel uses. Palm oil remains a little bit of a wild card. Palm oil prices have been palm oil futures have been the one market that hasn't just gone straight up over the last couple of weeks. It's played a little bit of a catch up over the last week, I would say, but it spent most of January falling because shipments out of Malaysia just plunged from December to January. I think that the export pace is going to continue to be the key factor for palm oil prices going forward. In the short term, I think the numbers are going to kind of continue to remain pretty ugly, in part because stocks are already historically tight. We're in the seasonal decline in palm oil production. And so just finding supplies to export is going to be more difficult than it is typically. But as we make that turn from declining seasonal production to rising seasonal production, I think that there's some chance for palm oil prices to weaken a little bit, even as exports pick up, just because I think stocks will probably build over that period. Now, it certainly could be that for palm oil, as production picks up, stocks remain relatively stable and exports just go up and absorb the extra supply. Given the world fundamentals for vegetable oils, that's probably a little bit more likely than this forecast would suggest. But I think that right now, market expectations for ending stocks in palm oil are probably a little bit lower than we will realize when we get to the end of the marketing year. Right now, we're kind of above that sort of magical 2 million ton carryout number or ending stocks number. I think much of the market is probably below that. Many analysts are probably below that. A big variable in there beyond the pace of exports will be the pace of production. There are concerns about labor shortages, and the weather has not been super supportive for palm oil production over the last couple months. But again, I think as we make that turn, and as typically happens in a period after La Nina tends to dump a bunch of rain on Malaysia and Indonesia, that production probably bounces back a little bit stronger than maybe some are expecting. And again, I think ultimately that means that ending stocks are a little bit higher than many people expect. Turning to biomass-based diesel, we got our first EMTS data for 2021. You can see the January biodiesel production number, the excess production number anyway, came in lower than the rest of where we're forecasting over the balance of the year. However, just from a seasonal perspective and our annual forecast, was really, really close to where the number came in. I think we were predicting 108 million gallons and it came in at 107 million gallons. So not very far from from our forecast, which suggests that maybe the rest of these months will work out similarly, and this line will hold. On the renewable diesel production side, renewable diesel production was stronger from December to January, I think, than biodiesel. Certainly, there was relatively large drop off in biodiesel production. Biodiesel production, I would say, it was probably closer to the historical seasonal pattern, where you see a lot of production in December, and then in January and February, production is really, really low. Renewable diesel was much smoother. And renewable diesel production was a bit above our expectation. We didn't make any changes to our forecast, either for the annual forecast or for the monthly forecast, because both, I think, were close enough that they didn't justify any big adjustments in the annual number. And it's still early in the year, so a lot can happen. So I think out of the EMTS data, there wasn't really anything that I took away that I just thought, oh, we've really gotten this wildly off base and we need to make some big adjustments. Of course, across the rest of the year, we will make some adjustments, obviously, in both our monthly forecasts and probably in our annual forecasts. A lot of what I talked about this week in the report is the level of the HOBO spread and its implications for RINs, both right now and going forward. RIN prices continue to remain really strong as the HOBO spread kind of trades around, or it's traded essentially between 170 and 180 a gallon for most of the last couple of weeks, really for most of February. That 180 line is really, really important, or it has been historically anyway. Typically, when prices have jumped above 180, in the following month, they have declined. And then from there, they have declined pretty sharply. 180 is not necessarily a barrier, so it's not like they go up to 185 and then they fall. They've gotten significantly above 180 before falling. And they did jump above 180 in January, and sure enough, in February, we're back below that. But I think because historically, we haven't had the LCFS program. And so those credits probably need to be factored into that calculus. And I think that probably means that the HOBO spread can trade above 180 or closer to 180 for longer than it has been able to historically. Now, what that means for RIN prices is that RIN prices have had to rally to offset the implied loss of profitability for biodiesel producers. But going forward, I think, and especially as renewable diesel capacity comes online, that relationship may break down a little bit. And so you may have the HOBO spread at relatively high levels, and you could have RINs at much lower levels. That's kind of how I would see sort of the pressure to rationalize biodiesel capacity occurring. Again, I think that's something that probably happens more in 2022 than in 2021. But I think that there's some potential for the HOBO spread and RIN prices to remain relatively well supported here going forward. I think our forecast going forward for RIN prices suggests that the D4 certainly remains really, really strong. In part, that's based on our forecast for the HOBO spread. But again, I would imagine at some point through the course of this year, we're probably going to have to adjust the way that we do this to start to account more for the impact of LCFS prices. Our LCFS price forecast kind of remains a slow and gentle downslope. I think in 2022, it'll probably be more interesting to see what happens with LCFS prices. There's some potential for a bigger drawdown in LCFS credit prices in 2022 as renewable diesel capacity comes online. But for most of 2021, we kind of see this slow drawdown. So while it's still in the slow drawdown phase, I think that you can still have a situation where the HOBO spread remains pretty high and RIN prices make up that difference for biodiesel producers. But once that acceleration lower in the LCFS starts to happen, then I think it's going to become really, really tough for biodiesel producers to sustain their current capacity. All right, I have droned on for 25 minutes, so let's try to take some questions.
All right, Tori. The first question that I have here is, what are the chances palm oil provides a significant portion of the feedstock mix for domestic biomass-based diesel production?
I'm sorry, could you, I missed just a little bit of that. Could you say it again?
Yep. What are the chances palm oil provides a significant portion of the feedstock mix for domestic biomass-based diesel production?
I think relatively small. I've had a couple people ask me about this. It's a natural thing to think that that we need a lot of feedstocks, and if you just look around at sort of the feedstock universe, sort of soybean oil, canola oil, and the low CI feedstocks, that it's challenging to allocate those in a way that meets the total demand. And so then people sort of naturally turn to palm oil as a way to kind of solve that problem. But I think given the challenges from an environmental or at least the environmental perception of palm oil, I think that that's going to be really, really difficult. Now, maybe you could have additional palm oil production in foreign generation and then shipped in. There's a couple of pathways, I think, that have been grandfathered in for that. Though, so I'm not sure that you get a big expansion that way either. I don't think palm oil is going to be the ultimate savior, I guess, is the bottom line.
Okay. Tori, got a couple more questions. Got about 3 minutes left. Why do you have the D6 RINs flattening out on your forecast?
D6, the way that we forecast D6 RINs is based on a couple of things. It's based on the spread between ethanol prices and corn prices, and then it's also based on net RIN generation. So RIN generation minus RIN retirements, or what we're predicting for RIN retirements. And I think that one, our ethanol forecast is higher than some. And so that suggests more supply than maybe a lot of other people are thinking. If our ethanol forecast is too optimistic, then probably D6 prices don't flatten out quite as much as we're projecting. And that would ultimately show up in that sort of net RIN generation portion of the model that we use to forecast D6 prices. But my guess is that's where we're getting the flattening out relative to what other people are expecting.
Okay. How is the outlook for soybean oil prices forecast in 2024 plus? Could we see prices greater than 50 cents a pound?
Yeah, absolutely. The way that we are forecasting it right now, and we have a long-term outlook report that dives into this. If you haven't seen that, or you haven't talked to somebody about that, I would encourage you to get in touch with one of the sales guys and talk to them about that. It covers the next 10 years out, and we update it quarterly, so you can see those price forecasts. But there is an expectation that prices will, the median price for the year will be above 50 cents out in 24, 25. Now, a lot of this will have to do with whether the The stuff that I was talking about earlier, crush can actually rise up to meet the demand. If crush capacity can come online, and probably more important, refining capacity can come online to meet the demand, then maybe our forecasts will ultimately be a little bit too high. If that doesn't happen, I think our forecasts are going to prove to be kind of pessimistic. Ultimately, by the end of the forecast period, we do think that this stuff starts to get sorted out and prices will start to return to whatever people think of as normal levels, or at least have the potential to return to whatever people think of as normal levels. But over the next 4 or 5 years, I think that's going to be very difficult. And I think there's a very good chance that prices remain above 50 cents.
All right, Tori, well, that's all the time we have for questions. To the attendees, next week we'll have Ryan Standard in talking about fats and oils. If you need to get a Tori, get a hold of Tori, you can email him at tori.alden@thejacobson.com. All right, Tori, thank you. Attendees, thanks a lot.
Thanks, George. Thanks, everybody.